Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, where podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs, and you can listen on the WDIY app, where there will be a two-week archive of Your Financial Choices. Today is August 4th, 2021. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing slightly down at 34,792, the NASDAQ slightly up at 14,780, and the S&P down at 4,402. Our topic tonight is websites for financial education. We are recording tonight, not taking live calls. If you have questions, please send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and that's available at any time, yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, I thought we would discuss some websites for financial education, and there are many more than I can speak to. My goal this evening is to make sure that people are aware of all of these websites that are available to help inform you on your financial decisions. It's one of the reasons we have this show here at WDIY for financial education, to help our community, especially the community that doesn't always have the resources to maybe use a financial advisor or a CPA or some other type of professional. It's about making sure that you understand the financial resources available to you to set you up to make good financial decisions going forward. And sometimes you eventually then could work with a financial professional for more specific situations specific to you. I wanted to start first with a website called mymoney.gov, and I do tend to refer to government websites when I'm talking about resources when I'm doing the radio show, because I think it's important to tap these resources that are there for us, that have been paid for by our government, that they have worked very hard to try to bring financial literacy to the people who need it. So I like to review those websites from time to time. And one of the websites that I have looked at is mymoney.gov, mymoney.gov. And I thought I would read a little bit about what they said in a report that I found, because I think it summarizes what we mean to kind of promote as far as financial literacy. So I am going to reference this, strategic element that they have, and it is a U.S. Financial Literacy and Education Commission, and they put out a U.S. National Strategy for Financial Literacy 2020. And I'm going to be quoting this now. So, defining financial literacy and education, financial literacy describes the skills, knowledge, and tools that equip people to make individual financial decisions and actions to attain their goals. This may also be known as financial capability, especially when paired with access to financial products and services. Financial education is the process by which people gain information, skills, confidence, and motivation to act through various means, including classroom education, one-on-one counseling and coaching, technology-based interventions, and self-study. A key desired outcome for financial education is sustained financial well-being, in which people can fully meet current and ongoing financial obligations, can feel secure in their financial future, and are able to make choices that allow enjoyment of life. And this, it's like a commission that is made up of a number of governmental organizations, because their edict, I believe, is to kind of reach out into the community across a number of resources. I believe even the U.S. Department of Agriculture is even one of the resources or part of this commission. They go on to say and have lead agencies for particular pieces of this financial literacy that they are promoting. And one is the basic financial capability, where the lead agency is CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And they address basic money management and financial skills and actions, including strategies for budgeting and savings, managing payment of bills and debts, understanding the appropriate use of credit and how that affects credit scores, credit reports, and future financing, and avoiding fraud and scams. Additionally, financial inclusion, the widespread access to and sound use of safe, affordable, and sustainable products and services, especially from insured depository institutions, including to traditionally underserved consumers and communities, such as institutions, including to traditionally, such as women and minorities, is a topic considered within basic financial capability. A key and timely focus area for this working group is financial preparedness and recovery via emergency savings and other steps that support financial resilience and overall financial well-being. This working group also addresses basic youth financial capability, which can be built through experiential learning opportunities such as youth-friendly financial products and services. The reason I thought this was interesting, too, and why I decided to do the show on financial education websites is last week I did a show on children and what that means to you if you have children. It's from a tax perspective, but also what you can do to educate your own child on finances. And I closed out the show talking about using experiences to raise awareness for your child of financial responsibility. For example, when they're young, if they were to get a pet, for example, if they beg for a pet and beg for a pet, have, you know, a conversation over the dinner table. Let's talk about what it means to have a pet. How much does the pet cost? What about the food? What about the crate or the dog dish and the harness and the dog food and the treats, because it can go on and on when you get a dog. And then not only the financial responsibility, but also the personal responsibility. And then I had even mentioned, as they get older, young adults, they start meeting people and dating and having conversations about financial responsibility and how are you spending your money if you're in a couple and you're going on dates. And it's so interesting because my son, who normally is here with us to answer the calls, had said, "Mom, you know, I really liked the end." And I get home and my husband said, "I really liked the end of the show." So apparently that was quite popular, talking about ways that you can educate the children on financial responsibility. I know, coming from a family of six children and parents who worked 6 days a week, very, very hard, we learned about very hard work. We all worked very hard and had, if we wanted something, we had to have the money to pay for it ourselves. And so we did learn about working hard and having money, but I wouldn't say that we necessarily learned good financial responsibility as far as what we could do with that money. Obviously, we did all pay for our own college education, all six kids, siblings, and you might say, well, that was really financially responsible. We, you know, paid probably for our own weddings and our own first homes and all of that kind of thing. So again, could be financial responsibility, but there's so much more to it than that. And I think that so many people aren't comfortable talking to their family members, their boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, necessarily about financial conflict or financial responsibility or strategies that they could use. So it's a step at a time. And tonight we're going to talk more about some of those websites that are available. And it's not all encompassing. I'm just trying to give examples of taking ownership of your own financial literacy. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening live. And also available live is WDIY.org, and friends and acquaintances and relatives outside our listening area can stream live as well or access the app for WDIY. Welcome back. We are recording the show this evening and will not be taking live calls. We are talking about websites for financial education, and as I mentioned, it's not all consuming. I'm just giving some examples and some opportunities for people to check out. I myself, even as a financial advisor, am always researching. Growing up, I was fifth of six kids. I was very young for my grade, and I never felt like I knew enough. And I always think I don't know something. So I'm always researching. It's a gift and a plague, I guess. I'm not sure what the other word is. But you do learn a lot that way when you think you don't know anything. But I think that it's also given me, you know, a lot of empowerment as well. And I think that for people who think they don't like finances, they don't like talking about finances, it really is about that insecurity of not knowing, and doing a little research and a little homework and learning about it can be so, so empowering. And I strongly encourage people to do so. Again, growing up and working very hard and having money to buy the things that I needed to buy didn't necessarily educate me on all the financial options that I might have had. So, for example, one of the first jobs I had, I was working at the University of Michigan, and at the time, people told me if I put money into this retirement account they had at the university would match my contributions 2-to-1. Well, I was young, had student loans, didn't think I had any money, and said, you know, no, I can't do that. I don't have enough money. I mean, granted, I didn't work there more than 2 years, but I think now, what I know now with my financial background is, what if I had, you know, kind of bitten the bullet a little bit and put money into that retirement account and got a 2-for-1 match? That's all free money. How would that have compounded over time? And again, my parents, hard workers, I will never take that away from them, but didn't necessarily have the financial education, which some people get through either maybe their parents, or as they get older, they start working with financial advisors, or they have a friend who does, and they start picking up on these tips that maybe the general public doesn't generally, you know, have right off the top. So looking at some of these websites, and let me finish one of the other comments I wanted to say from mymoney.gov and this U.S. Financial Literacy and Education Commission, who did put out this U.S. National Strategy for Financial Literacy. One other item they had, a lead agency was the Department of Labor, Saving for Retirement and Investor Education. So that is a resource as well. DOL.gov focuses on helping Americans plan, save, and invest for retirement and for long-term needs and avoiding frauds and scams that can imperil their savings and investments. This area also includes helping Americans, particularly women who face a greater risk of poverty in old age, understand Social Security benefits, workplace retirement benefits, and savings and investing options, including managing in times of volatility. Now, I will add, I've mentioned government websites, and I'm going to talk about more as I go through the show, but because we just mentioned the Department of Labor and some of the material that they put out and have available on their site to educate on retirement and investor education, anyone who works who does have a retirement plan through their employer quite often also will have a website or access to information about their retirement accounts. It is amazing to me how many people don't really access that. There are people who have maybe made a good decision in putting money into their retirement account. That's why it's so valuable to work somewhere and start contributing right away to get in that habit, and you don't see it. If it just happens automatically, you set it up to happen automatically, that's wonderful. But what we sometimes find out is people haven't looked at their account for, 5-10 years. And then you might be a little out of balance. You might have a different risk tolerance. Maybe when you first started, you didn't know anything about investing, and maybe you let it default to the investment option that the plan had. And the default option might have been a money market account. So you want to make sure that even if you're making those good choices, like I mentioned, I did probably as a kid, paying my way for things. If you think you've made a good decision in putting money away in a retirement account, you do have to still revisit that once in a while and check, did I pick investment options? That are appropriate for my age, my timeline, and my risk profile? You might not have understood that when you first started. Maybe you're a little older now, time to revisit that. So please also take advantage of some of the employer websites for retirement plans that you may have. And that typically will tie into whatever custodian they may be using for the retirement plan. One thing about that, quite often we see that an employer plan might have a website of the custodian, and the custodian will let you play with retirement numbers. It always fascinates me when they make you feel like you can put in 2 minutes or 5 minutes worth of numbers into their retirement calculator to see if you'll have enough money for retirement. And, that's the retirement plan. It doesn't factor in so many things that it just fascinates me, because if I put in my information, I think it says I never can retire. And that's because they assume that I'm going to spend at the level of my income. And that's just not the case. I don't spend to my income level. And especially when I retire, I certainly don't plan to spend to my income level. I'm not a big spender overall. So just keep in mind when you are accessing some of this financial education that you kind of look at it with your eyes open to make sure that you, get the whole picture of it. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention, some of the websites that I'm going to talk about through the rest of the show, I'm going to, when we come back from the next break, I will talk about a few things just about mymoney.gov and information that's there. I'm going to talk about the IRS's website, irs.gov. It is one of my favorite websites, maybe because I am a CPA, but there is a lot of information there. SSA.gov, Social Security website, so much good information there. I probably get more questions about Social Security than anything, and they have such a great website with great publications, lots of information there. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Now, I'm going to just give you some examples of some of the information that's available on some of these different websites. And then I had some information from the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. They have a consumer section, which is consumer.ftc.gov. And I also have some information, examples of information that you could find on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune into WDIY anywhere, on the go, with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store and turn your phone into your trusted public radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone, live, and play all your favorite music programs on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And at our break, I was just talking with James Johnson about the beauty and benefit of putting money into your 401k with setting it and forgetting it. And he gave us a little piece of trivia that I thought would be fun to share.
Yeah, Ron Papil, unfortunately, the man who created that catchphrase, just passed away at, I think it was 86, but set it and forget it, Ron Papil. And that's what I do. I set it and forget it for certain things. But I'm also a poor savings person. I don't do enough saving.
Well, but, you know, over time that can always change. We have to also live our lives. That's what I believe.
Quality of life expense, I call it.
That's right, James. And to that point, you know, I will add that, you know, I'm a CPA, and quite often CPAs, you have a reputation of being tight with their money, pinch a penny or whatever, Ebenezer Scrooge. But I do believe in having a balance. But what I will say when we're talking about financial education, one of the most important things that I would offer out to people, especially over the past year and a half, is the importance of an emergency reserve. I cannot stress that enough. The emergency reserve helps you really feel empowered in those moments, those crises, those states of emergencies. Think about what happened over the past year and a half. We had people who either lost their jobs or had to go down to part-time work. People whose accounts they saw drop significantly in the market. And for those clients that we had that had that emergency reserve, that had some of their portfolio allocated to make sure they had, you know, their next 1, 2, 3, sometimes 5 years of spending within their risk tolerance, they were able to tolerate what we just went through so much more than people who weren't ready for that. The emergency reserve is also really important, and I have found very powerful in allowing people to do planning post-retirement. So I've also had a number of clients who have saved a healthy reserve. And typically when we talk about reserve, when I first got in this business, we were talking about a 3-month reserve. And then, you know, 2008 hit, and then we talk like about a 6-month reserve, and it goes on, and now we're usually talking about a year reserve, 6 months to a year reserve. We also used to say, well, if you have a credit card, you could always use part of that. But of course, we don't want people putting balances on their credit cards that they're not going to pay off. But what I have seen is some people who have maybe decided, should we retire a little early, maybe pre-Social Security age. So Social Security, early retirement to be able to collect Social Security is age 62. For people born 1960 or after, it's age 67. And there might be that window where you might want to retire before you start collecting. If you collect early, you take a haircut. If you wait, you know, you're going to have a higher benefit than by taking early. But I have seen people plan for X amount of months or even X number of years of cash available to fund their cash flow needs until they start taking Social Security or a pension or whatever it might be. And during those intervening years, they may do tax planning strategies such as IRA conversions to Roth. To be able to think forward, to have those options, you really have to have that financial literacy. You have to understand how the numbers work. You have to understand the tax savings or, you know, the which money, where am I pulling money from? How am I funding this? Now, one might think, gosh, it doesn't make sense to have 2 years worth of cash in the bank to fund that 2 years of, spending. But it depends on the situation. It depends on what your goals are. It's what you're coordinating. And different people can choose different paths or options and navigate it differently. But it's about being kind of proactive and making sure that you're working on a strategy to meet your goals. All right. So let me just go back to talking about the websites for financial education. And the show this evening is going to be pre-recorded. We are not taking live calls, but if you'd like to send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, I do my best to answer those, and people who have emailed me can attest to that. So I will respond to your questions directly, if not on the air. So that's yourfinancialchoices.com. So mymoney.gov, right on the front page, one of the things they have is something called My Money 5. And it says, making the most of your money starts with 5 building blocks for managing and growing your money. It's the My Money 5. And I thought this was good to kind of point out. Some key 5, they have 5 principles. And they say, keep these in mind to make day-to-day decisions and plan your financial goals. And the 5 principles are earn, save and invest is one, protect, spend, borrow. So those are the 5 key principles. This is just from My Money 5. I'm not sure if I would say these would be my 5 key principles or not, but I think it's a good framework for people starting out. Earn, it says make the most of what you earn by understanding your pay and benefits. Real quick, I've done shows on this. What I have suggested to people is if you are in the job market and you're out comparing jobs, either take a piece of paper and make a bunch of columns for how many different positions you're looking for, or if you're adept at Excel, put it in an Excel spreadsheet and say, okay, what is the pay? What is the hourly pay or the salary? Is there overtime? Is there not overtime? Is there bonus? Is there not bonus? Are there benefits? What are the benefits? Is the employer paying the medical? Are they paying part of the medical? How much of the medical? What medical options do you have? Does one offer a high deductible health plan, which won't cost as much, but you'd have a higher deductible out of pocket? Or do they offer some kind of a PPO plan where the premiums might be a little bit higher, but you might not have as much out of pocket on a deductible? Do they have a 401k? Do they automatically put money in? That's called a safe harbor. Do they not do that, but do an employer match? If you put money in, do they match? Those matches calculate into that compensation you're thinking about. Overtime adds to your compensation. Bonus opportunities add to your compensation. And ability for raises. What is the promotion ability at that particular position? Put all of this into a spreadsheet to see how those numbers work out when you're talking about comparing the pay and the benefits. It's not always equal. So that's the earning principle. Save and invest. It's never too early to start saving for future goals such as a house or retirement, even by saving small amounts. And of course, we already talked about saving for a retirement account, setting it and forgetting it. As Ron Papil said, setting it and forgetting it, putting those amounts into a retirement account. Of course, any regular listener knows that we love Roth IRAs. And if you have the ability to do a Roth IRA, meaning you're under certain income limits and have enough earned income, you can put money into a Roth IRA and always take out those original contributions if you have to. That's what I always like, because it's kind of like you can you can tiptoe into this idea of savings, feeling like you can get it back if you have to. But what ends up happening is you see it growing and growing, and you get so excited about it, it encourages you to save more. So that's my little backdoor trick to get people to save money. And then it's save and invest was one of those five principles. So it's not only saving, but it's also about investing it to make it compound and work for you. Folks, we're at the halfway point, so we will continue our discussion on the websites for your financial education, and in particular, we'll finish up with My Money 5 when we return. If you have questions, please email them through yourfinancialchoices.com. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It's 75 degrees, a few clouds in the sky. Tonight, partly cloudy, low 59. Thursday, mostly sunny, high 84. And mostly clear, some patchy fog, low 61 Thursday night. Friday, morning fog, sunny skies, and a high of 89. WDIY, 88.1 FM. Your award-winning Lehigh Valley Public Radio station for over 25 years. Many choices, real voices. And speaking of real voices, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, James Johnson. I love James Johnson's voice, a very nice radio voice. Welcome back. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app and on WDIY.org. When we're not live on air, you can also tap podcasts of prior shows under Public Affairs. The five principles under My Money 5, as we continue our discussion on websites for financial education. The five principles, we've talked about earn, we've talked about save and invest, protect. Oh, let me finish about invest. So you, as I mentioned, some people, when they start with their 401k, if they think they don't know anything about investing, they'll let the plan default to the plan default. Be very, very careful, because sometimes plan defaults on 401ks, employer-provided 401ks, might be a stable value fund, a money market, cash fund. So please be careful of default funds. You want to review that and see what works for you. So set it and forget it is great, but don't set it and forget to invest it, because compounding is your friend over time when you're starting out and saving for your retirement. And by compounding, I mean your money starts to work for you and make money as well. If you don't take care of it and nurture it, it's not going to be able to work for you as well. The third principle, protect, taking precautions about your financial situation, accumulate emergency savings. We've already talked about that, and have the right insurance. So, of course, risk management. We don't want you to lose your assets. We want you to make sure you have, you know, your protection for your home and your car and your life. Disability and short-term disability, those might be two of the benefits also when you're evaluating which employer to go, you know, to accept what position. That could also be a benefit they may offer. Sometimes they don't pay for it, but they may offer it for you to buy. So that's what we mean by protect. If you're a renter, you can get renter's insurance. I think probably a lot of apartment complexes require you to have that at this point. So that is something to keep in mind. And the fourth principle, spend. Be sure you're getting a good value, especially with big purchases, by shopping around and comparing prices and products. A good tip my husband gave me when we were first together, I mentioned it even last week. He would say, we'd be out shopping and he would say, yeah, it looks like a really good deal. Like, it's on sale, so I think I have to have it. And he would say, if you remember it, why don't we go finish our errands? And if you remember it, then it was something you really wanted. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I didn't remember it. And then another thing he said, because I did work retail for years, he would say, hun, you do know that things are always on sale, right? And I thought that was a great piece of advice, because every time I thought I had to buy something because it was on sale, and I had that, you know, aha moment, light bulb, remember, things always seem to be on sale. It really is true. If you are present in the moment and it was something you were looking for some time, that's a whole nother matter. You plan it out. If it's something you wanted, you see it on sale, okay. But in that moment, do you really need that TV just because it was on sale or those shoes or that outfit? So just watch out for that kind of thing, being smart spending. And I also, early in my, I guess, my husband and I were already married, but had met a nice young couple, some best friends of ours now, that he had said to us, my husband and I both grew up in very large families, so we really didn't have a lot, but our friend came from, you know, some wealth, and he said that his family had always taught them by quality. So I thought that was really interesting, because if you buy that kitchen table that's cheap and maybe isn't going to stand the test of time, and you do that again and again, is that actually cheaper than maybe spending something, you know, a little bit more expensive on a nicer high quality table that you'll keep for a very long time? Well, I did learn to buy, you know, good cars that we keep a very long time, and we take care of our cars, that kind of thing. All right, so that's the fourth principle from mymoney.gov. Borrowing money can enable some essential purchases and builds credit, but interest costs can be expenses, and if you borrow too much, you will have a large debt to be repaid. My big takeaway on borrowing is people who have credit cards, if you're only paying the monthly minimum payment, I don't know if you ever get out of that unless it's a 0% rate. Those minimum payments are set up. You could have debt for a very, very long time. Try to only borrow what you think you can pay back. Obviously, we can't all do that for houses, but you want to be smart about houses. And the banks are more willing to finance a home that they know they can secure by that property versus a credit card where you're buying, you know, miscellaneous consumer kind of goods and things like that, that they're going to charge you an interest rate of 24%. So please be careful. Let's talk about some of our websites now. IRS.gov, again, one of the, you know, better websites, and one I, you know, visit quite often only because I'm a CPA, but there is so much information there. And what I have found in the last 2 years is the legislative changes that we've had over the last several years are so hard to keep up with. And over the years, people have even come in to me and are still referencing tax law that happened 30 years ago. I've had people say, now, if I sell my house, isn't it true that I can roll over the gain into my next house and I don't have to recognize the gain? I think that rule was when I first started back in the early 80s. That rule hasn't been around for a long time. We can have a principal residence, and as long as we live and own it 2 out of the last 5 years, if we have a gain on it, we can sell it and we don't even have to report that, unless someone gives us a 1099-S, Essence and Sam, then we might have to report it, but it would not be reportable as a gain as long as we lived and owned it 2 out of the last 5 years. So these are just things to be aware of, that rules change, and if you think you have a special situation, chances are you could Google it or search it on the internet. But the reason I like the government websites is because I feel that's the most up-to-date information. For example, why you have to be careful when we're talking about financial education on the internet, and I keep referencing government websites, is I had to apply for an employer identification number for a client. And I was just going to go on the IRS.gov, and you have to get a form for the client to sign. It's called an SS-4 to have authorization to give a third-party designee to apply for this number. And for some reason, I have no idea why I did this, because I always go directly to the IRS to do this. I Googled EIN, and up came a website, you know, applying for the EIN, the SS-4, because I wanted to get the blank form to complete for my client to sign. And so I click on it and I start looking at it. It's the SS-4. And I realize it wasn't the IRS's website. It was some other website. And it reminded me that I had a client who applied for an EIN on his own and he paid $250 for it. Well, someone could go on the IRS's website and apply for an employer identification number for such things as, you know, a new business, an S-Corp or an estate or a trust. You can do that yourself and not pay a fee at all. So it's about also awareness on these websites that we find. So please be careful of that. That's why I like the government websites. I feel like those are more secure and safe. So what else we see if we first just type in irs.gov, and what is so powerful here is the first page that pops up, and I'm going to just read a few of the things they have. Get my payment, get your refund status, get details on the advanced child tax credit, get your tax record, get coronavirus tax relief, file your taxes for free, view your account, make a payment. That's on the first page of the IRS's website, irs.gov. And I have had a number of people call me and say, where's my refund? Where's my refund? Because the IRS was a little delayed in getting refunds to people that may have paper filed their returns, or there was maybe a discrepancy between the stimulus payment and the recovery rebate credits that were filed for on the tax return, and their refunds were delayed. So you can go in there and find your refund status. And even if you have an amended return, you can find your refund status. So there's a lot of information there. But what's really important, too, is you can file your tax returns for free. If your income, I believe, is below $72,000, the IRS partners with certain tax filing software providers to file a free tax return. And I think it can also include the state return. I'm not really sure. But they also provide free filling of tax forms for people who make more than $72,000. But they expect that you have to have some experience. They're not going to tell you which forms to fill out in that case. So if you for years had filed a tax return, maybe you've retired now, maybe you used to go to an accountant or something like that, but your return's pretty easy now. Maybe you have Social Security and maybe a 1099-R. If you know that's the case, you don't need any special forms. That's just the 1040. You fill in your 1099-R income and your Social Security income, and boom, you're probably ready to file. Now, they don't have state filing in that situation, but federal filing. So how does this help us with our financial education? Well, it empowers you to do your tax return, maybe save some money on some tax preparation, but being aware of the IRS website and all the information that they have available, because there might be accountants who would charge every time you call to ask the question about your refund status or getting your payment or your tax record, and some of this information is available that you could do on your own. But they also have information, for example, on credits. So if you look on the IRS website and you wonder what kind of tax credits might be out there and available to you to empower yourself in your financial education and your tax filing information. They have credits for family and dependent credits, income and savings credits, homeowner credits, healthcare credits, education credits, all different kinds of credits that might be available to you if you know about them. So that is available there as well. Another favorite website I have is the Social Security website, ssa.gov. I think they really do an incredible job. I know that people sometimes have complained about Social Security or if the office is busy, but they really have an incredible website. I've used it for years and years, and there's lots of information there. So one of the things they have that first popped up was a retirement ready fact sheet for workers ages 49 to 60, where they simply talk about that retirement's different for everyone, earnings are essential, that as you get closer to age 60, you know, 62, you're going to have choices to make about your Social Security. You, of course, don't have to take it at 62. Some people can take it at 60 if you are a surviving spouse. If you're a widow, you would be eligible for benefits at 60. If you are a widow and have children under certain ages, you may be able to file for family benefits as well. And they talk about working and how it boosts your benefits, but also remind you that some Social Security benefits will be income taxable, and some people don't realize that as well. They don't think about it until they retire and they say, wait, why is my Social Security taxable? I've already paid taxes on this. Well, that changed, I think, under Reagan. So how much of your Social Security gets taxed depends on how much other income you have on your tax return. But they talk about that and remind you that some of your income may be taxed in that little brochure. And there are some other publications that are available as well, which we'll talk about when we come back from our next break. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. This is a pre-recorded show. Well, it's going to be a pre-recorded show. I am live in the studio, but we are recording. And if you have questions, the phone number or the website is wdiy.org. And if you have questions, you can send them through yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. When I'm not live, I don't know how to speak anymore. James also had a wonderful idea. If any of our listeners know of any young folks out there, maybe who have started their own business, maybe we have some budding entrepreneurs out there in the community, teenagers with maybe a landscaping business or a cooking business, something like that, let us know. I'd love to hear about it. And you can send that through yourfinancialchoices.com and reach out, and we might be able to talk a little bit. Some of the other information, just guides, when we're talking about websites for financial education, again, there are so many. I am just particular to government websites. I worry sometimes what other websites might be trying to sell you, or how they might lean one way or another or direct you toward, you know, something that someone would try to be selling to you. So the government websites, I think, kind of, there's a lot of work in them. And as James said earlier, it's seeing your tax dollars at work when we take advantage of all this information. One of the publications that's on the Social Security website, ssa.gov, and you can just go click and there's a section that says publications. It's five things every woman should know about Social Security. And it's not just women, actually. It's the reason that came out, that's been around forever, that publication or something to that effect about what women should know about Social Security. Because historically, women were making less than men. The Social Security Administration was trying to inform women who made less than men what their rights and benefits would be should they get divorced or should their husband die. But the reason behind it is because women typically made less than men, you know, they wanted you to be informed. Because, again, is there some inherent belief that women aren't as financially savvy as men? I'm not sure. So that's why it's important to have our financial education, our financial literacy all buttoned up, no matter who we are. Because I have seen circumstances where it's the man who's not, you know, the financial person in the relationship. But what I mean by this is really important even for men, the bottom line is it's important for the lower earning spouse to be aware of their benefits. How about that? Instead of saying five things every woman should know about Social Security, how about five things every person who is the lower wage earner should know about Social Security. Some of the things they talk about: nothing keeps you from getting your own Social Security benefit, meaning both partners in a marriage could earn and have a benefit. There's no marriage penalty or limit to benefits paid to a married couple. If you're married and you and your spouse have worked and earned enough credits individually, you will each get your own Social Security benefit. If you're due, for example, a Social Security benefit of $1,200 per month and your spouse is due a Social Security benefit of $1,400 a month, the two of you will get $2,600 per month in retirement benefits. If you're due two benefits, you're generally paid the higher rate, not both. And this is the part that's important for a spouse to know. As a spouse, if you're eligible for benefits on both your own work record and your spouse's work record, you may be required to file for both benefits. We call this requirement deemed filing because when you apply for one benefit, you're required or deemed to file for the other. If you're required to file for both, you generally receive the higher benefit amount. So then they go through some examples of that and talk about that. If you're divorced and were married at least 10 years, you may be eligible on your ex's Social Security record. As I've mentioned on prior shows, if you're married and you get divorced, make sure you keep the information on your ex-spouse, because when you go to file for Social Security, if you're eligible on a ex-spouse's record, they will need that information. They will need the Social Security number. Divorced women who are married, and this could be men as well. Again, I said this article is geared toward women, but it really could be the lower earning spouse. Divorced women who were married at least 10 years may be eligible for Social Security based on their ex's record. This applies if they are unmarried and not entitled to a higher benefit on their own record when they become eligible for Social Security. Some women sign divorce decrees relinquishing their rights to Social Security on their ex's record. Those clauses in divorce decrees are rarely enforced. I've never seen that. Any benefits paid to a divorced spouse do not reduce payments made to the ex or any payments due the ex's current spouse. I have heard people ask that question. Generally, the same payment rules apply to divorced wives and widows as to current wives and widows. That means most divorced, I'm going to say people, collect their own Social Security while the ex is alive, but they can apply for a higher widow's rate when the ex dies. Who knew that? This is why it's important to be aware of these resources so you can find more information. When your spouse or ex dies, you may be due a widow's benefit. A widow is eligible for between 71% and 100% at full retirement age. So 71% at age 60, 100% at full retirement age of what the spouse was getting before they died. We must pay your own retirement benefit first, then supplement it with whatever extra benefits you are due as a widow. This will bring your Social Security benefit amount up to the widow's rate. Okay, so lots of information on that. I think that's important. Then there was a publication on how Social Security can help you when a family member dies. This is where they were talking about a widow or widower age 60 or older, age 50 or older if disabled, a widow or widower of any age caring for the deceased child who is under age 16 or disabled. An unmarried child of the deceased who is either younger than age 18 or up to age 19 if they're a full-time student in an elementary or secondary school, age 18 or older with a disability that began before age 22. A lot of details behind this, and I don't want to overwhelm our listeners by all of that, but lots of information on Social Security's website, ssa.gov. Here's the big one that people are still surprised about. I've been talking about it for a long time, and it can really put money in your pocket. What can you do if you think your Medicare income-related premium is incorrect? Anyone who is collecting Social Security or filed for Medicare at age 65 who are getting Medicare, if you have income that is over certain thresholds, that's page one income, and it includes tax-free income, so tax-exempt interest or dividends are included in it. If your income is over certain thresholds, you're going to pay a higher Medicare premium, and they look back 2 years, and they'll assess a higher premium on your Medicare premiums. If you have a life event, you can file a form to ask them to adjust that Medicare premium amount. I believe it's an SS-44. I don't know why it's not on this little printout that I got off the website, but there is a form that you can complete to let them know that you had a life event that changed your income or that is impacting your income. So, for example, if you were working and you made $200,000, and then the next year you applied for Medicare and they looked back, they would think your income is over the threshold, one of the thresholds. And the thresholds, there's tiers and they're very tight. So the extra premium that you could pay on your Medicare can really add up. And if you look back and the reason your income was over was because you were working, you can file a form with the Social Security Department to let them know that you had a life event. You just tell them that you separated from service or you had a reduction in work, and they will adjust for that. And I've had a lot of clients, we've completed that form for them, and they have received lots of money back because they weren't aware of it. They paid the higher premiums. I alerted them to it. They filled out the form, let Social Security know, and they were refunded the excess premiums that they paid, you know, having not factored in that life event that changed. Life event could be a spouse change. It could be, as I said, separation from service, reduction in employment. It doesn't happen, you know, oh, I had big capital gains last year and I don't have big capital gains this year. I had a required minimum distribution last year. Oh, and in 2020, I didn't have to take it. So that's a life event. No, those don't count. These have to be, you know, other types of life events. So that information is available on ssa.gov. Another website, and I frequently get questions about credit, the consumer.ftc.gov, that's the Federal Trade Commission, consumer.ftc.gov, fixing your credit, frequently asked questions. I believe this is a great place to start in your financial education and literacy if you have concerns over your credit or are trying to improve your credit. It's a couple pages. It was really nice. It talks about your credit history, your free credit reports, credit repair, what to do if you paid a scammer, and report credit repair scams, and what makes credit good or bad, what happens if there's negative information in my credit report. It sounded to me when I read through this that there wasn't always a lot that you could do, but it does tend to fall off your record after X number of years. So, you know, you might just want to keep checking and just be really good for as long as you can and get those good habits going. They talk about the different credit agencies where you can get your free report, your annualcreditreport.com, and the national credit bureaus have that information. Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, they're required to give you a free copy of your credit report once every 12 months. So some people will feather that out. They might do one in January, one in June, and one in, you know, November or December. And you can keep an eye on your credit using those resources. So that's a website that's available. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, I mentioned, buying a house, one of the biggest purchases you're ever going to do in your life, buying a house. There are some tools there on cfpb.gov. Buying a house, tools and resources for home buyers, being aware of mortgage closing scams. Before you make an offer on a home, they talk about being prepared to shop, explore loan choices, compare loan offers, get ready to close, and then they have a number of key tools on the website as well. Exploring interest rates, loan estimator explainer, closing checklist, closing disclosure explainer, guide to closing forms. So bottom line, the big emphasis for tonight's show was websites for your financial education, for your financial literacy, more than we can talk about this evening, but certainly making sure that you're tapping government websites that are specifically designed to help us make better financial choices and to be empowered and make good decisions. And so I hope that it helped a little bit. And from those websites, there's lots and lots of other links within each of those websites that I mentioned as well. And you can always check FINRA.org and the SEC, and I think it's the SEC.gov, for information on investing options as well. Next week, I'm going to have a pre-recorded show for Music Fest Week. And then the next week I will be back, which will be August 18th. And coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, James Johnson, for being here, and listeners for listening. Have a great week.